Christian, ready?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, let's go ahead. Yep. All right. Gallon us in. Are we live on air here? We're good? Okay, awesome. Just making sure everything technically is all set. We're going to do the pledge. Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Hello, Frank.
All right. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Chris Bond, our attorney, to explain what happened in jail car this morning.
Okay.
Or not necessarily explain what happened in jail car, but just the rules that we're approving, what changes there might be, so in case anybody has questions.
Sure. So there's two rules in front of you today, and they are they're both going to hopefully go through a final approval by this board today, but they are in slightly different procedural postures. So the simplest, most straightforward one is the remote learning rule. So that was sent to JLCAR on a conditional approval request. They approved it today. They had it on their consent agenda. We were under the understanding that it was going to be on their consent agenda. It actually was on their regular agenda. They were anticipating there might have been some public comments. There were no public comments, and so they adopted with no discussion. So that one is ready for final adoption, and you have that one in your packet.
Right.
The other rule is the 800 rules implementing the EFA program. That rule is in a slightly different procedural posture because the rule that JLCAR considered today hasn't actually been approved by this board for submission because we made changes at JLCAR's request. We reached out to some stakeholders. There were some tweaks that were made that this board hasn't voted on. So you actually have to vote on that first. That's called the conditional approval request. When you do that, I will go email that to the OLS staff. They are just doing that just to confirm that what JLCAR looked at today is what you guys have approved.
Correct.
So you approve it, it goes to them, they will look at it. And then they, in looking at that rule, had some discussion today, and the commissioner might want to speak to some of the issues that they discussed. And then at the end of their discussion, they took a roll call vote and approved the rule 6-3. There are some editorial comments that need to be corrected. So you have that in your packet. But what you don't have in your packet is there were three additional editorial fixes that JLCAR caught between the time when we prepared those for your packet and now, basically.
Okay.
So last night we got those. So I don't think we have time to print those out just now, but I can walk you through what those few little changes are when we get to that stage and it's time to adopt. But that doesn't affect your first vote, which is on the conditional approval request, which we actually sent them a few weeks ago.
Yeah. So I think the thing to do would be the stuff that didn't get changed today that we actually have in the packet. So particularly in relation to the medical professionals that Jerry Zellin had talked about can be changed to comply with the list that was in statute already. Can you just explain that to the
So I think substantively that was really the only significant change that was made between the last time this board would have seen it and when it went to JLCAR. And there were other discussions we had, but we didn't end up making any changes. So based in particular with regard to issues of unconstitutional delegation of authority to the scholarship organization. We didn't make any changes in response to that, and JLCAR ultimately approved that. And also there were concerns about wanting some limiting language in here about using the funds for religious purposes, or religious instruction, rather, and the department took the firm position that the statute as written already doesn't allow for that. So and JLCAR ended up agreeing and adopting our rules without that change. But the area where we did make a change, where there was public comment from the New Hampshire Association of Special Education Administrators, was around differentiated aid. So specifically, the EFA program provides that a student gets the differentiated aid that they would have gotten had they attended the public school in their residential district. And so one of the categories of differentiated aid is for students that are receiving special education services. So our original draft for the rules, we had language that said a certified medical professional licensed to practice anywhere in the United States could make a finding of a disabling condition. And if that process happened, then that person would be regarded as having been eligible for differentiated aid. And the objection of the NHSAA and others was that that's not the process that school districts use to determine who's going to receive special education services. So in meeting with their attorney, we tweaked the rule significantly to more closely mirror the process that is used. And that is at section 803. Give me a moment to find it. 80302. No, that's not.
I'm a little confused. Are we on EFA? Are we talking about the EFA and the
Yes. We're talking about the 800 rules. Yeah.
All right. Just wanted to make sure I knew what
this was. So it's at 804.01C. And the new rule reads that a pupil shall be eligible for the differentiated aid amount set forth in RSA 198.40-A2D for EFAs under RSA 194F. If there's been a determination of eligibility for special education by a qualified examiner for each assessment as defined and enumerated in ED 1107.04 table 1100.1 in accordance with 34 CFR 300.300 through 300.311. And then D, such determination of special education, such determination of eligibility for special education in C above may be completed one at the expense of the parent or guardian, such expense shall represent a qualifying EFA expense, or two, at no expense to the parent or guardian by the student's resident district pursuant to Ed 1105.02. So that entire section there, C and especially D, is changed from the original rule we had where we said a determination of a disabling condition could just be made by a medical provider. So that process, it pulls in the CFR sections. That's what a school district would do. And, you know, in talking with our special ed director, it is exceedingly rare that someone would go through this kind of determination process and have a parent who thinks that the condition they were determined to have was causing education issues that required special services for there to not actually be special services. But the continued objection from NHSAA to this change was that, well, that still isn't exactly what the schools do, because the schools actually have to have an LEA team make that, an IEP team make that determination. And I think at that point, since the parent is actually a member of the IEP team, and it's just exceedingly rare that that happens, that would functionally just become a gatekeeping function that would allow the public schools who were not going to be educating that child at all to just be the adjudicators of whether or not a kid gets special differentiated aid. And so we weren't comfortable going any further than this, and, you know, ultimately Joe Carr agreed with it. But I think, Commissioner, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think there were any other substantive changes that we made to the rule.
No, that was the
last time.
And just so everybody understands, and you correct me if I'm wrong, so the special education administrators wanted to do away with the medical provider outside of the doctor and have the kids go into the school, basically, to do that process as it's laid out in statute, but the EFA program deals with a lot of kids who aren't already in a public school. So what we came up with was we took that list of providers that's already enrolled, and it breaks down who's qualified to make a special ed determination for every type of special education there is. So there's a lot of therapists in there, but they may be services for the blind or services for the hard of hearing, have special medical providers that are listed in that list. And included in the list are also school professionals. Guidance counselors are allowed to do this, and various other folks in the school. So we just took that list and said, we're going to use this list. However, the parent can choose a provider from this list that is not inside the school. So, and that's already the case. So, so as a therapist, a psychologist that would be on the list, the parent could go outside to a licensed psychologist in the state, and it's parallel. So if they want that particular service, they get a therapist to diagnose, and if the therapist says you need the services, then they would qualify for the funding. The difference is, you can see here in D, they can choose the outside person from the list who's not in the school, and they can pay for that on their own. And that includes, that would be a qualifying EFA expense, so they can use their EFA funding for that. Or they can choose to do it at the resident school in, under the normal process, in which case the school has to provide that service the way they normally would provide that service. And that's not, and that is consistent with existing law. So.
If they, if the parent has it at their own expense, the first way, they can go anywhere in the state outside of their district.
They can go to any license. Well, for a provider, so they can't make another school district do it. You can't,
right.
You can't go to another district and say you have to provide the service, but they can choose a medical provider from that list of approved providers.
From anywhere in the state.
From anywhere in the state. Yeah.
Beyond the state, right?
Well, yeah.
They carry those licenses.
Okay.
I have a question. Who vetted these services, these providers?
Well, this is any licensed provider. So it says, and that's already in the rule now, or it's the approved list already says. So if you, for any number of services, it says the people who are qualified to diagnose whether the kid has special ed needs comes from this list of licensed providers. So as long as you go to a licensed therapist or whatever the provider happens to be, that's the vetting. You can't just, go to somebody who claims to be a therapist.
Oh, no.
You have to go to an actual certified therapist.
No, my only question was, is that if you had a child that had been seeing a medical psychiatrist or psychologist for many years and a very legitimate, licensed, certified, has all the credentials to be one, and that person wouldn't be on the list. I'm just wondering how.
Oh, no, it's there's not a list of names. It's just a list of credentials.
Okay.
So you can see any provider you want as long as they're credentialed.
Thank you.
Yep. All right, everybody got that?
I have a question, but it has nothing to do with this particular topic. I wasn't expecting to talk about it, but I want to ask. So.
Yeah.
Can you just say the part you said about, you mentioned, I missed a piece of it, but what you said about the understanding about EFAs and religious schools?
So it's the department's understanding that EFA funds cannot be used to support religious instruction. They can certainly go to religious schools.
Okay.
Yeah. That's very. In fact, we made the point today at Jelcar that it would be unconstitutional for us to say that the money couldn't go to religious schools.
How do you differentiate
between religious schools and religious instruction?
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, that's a really good question because and there was a little bit of drilling down into that at Jelcar today, but the Supreme Court precedents are very, very clear that based on religious status, you can't deny public funding. So in 2020, the U.S. Supreme Court decided the case of Espinoza versus Montana, where there was a program, not exactly like our program, but it was a scholarship program with public dollars going to it. And based on the Montana Constitution, the Montana Supreme Court had held that funds couldn't go to religious institutions through that program. And when that was challenged, the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, it would be a violation of the Free Exercise Clause to not allow the people who are getting this benefit to use it where they choose to use it. And if that's at a religious institution, that's their prerogative. And so based on that, religious status can't be the thing that prevents these public funds from going. But there's still Supreme Court precedent that says, because there's two parts to the First Amendment, there's the Free Exercise Clause, that's sort of what Espinoza is based on. There's also an Establishment Clause where the state can't establish a religion or support a specific religious viewpoint. So there's an older Supreme Court case, Locke versus Davy, where someone is essentially trying to use public funds for what amounted to like a seminary, so like religious training, and that was clearly not acceptable. But sometimes the line between what is just status and what is religious use isn't always super clear, and that's kind of an emerging area. And we were talking about different hypotheticals today, like imagine, well, we talked about textbooks, for example, and the commissioner made the point that there's a lot of secular classes about world religions where you might learn about Hinduism and Judaism and Buddhism. And that's not religious instruction, but, at what point do those things sort of cross the line? And it's sort of because of some of those complexities that we didn't think it was as simple. Some of the committee members were urging the board to just adopt a blanket prohibition on using funds for religious instruction. But, I mean, that opens up this whole door of what's religious instruction, and that's going to have to be determined on a case-by-case basis. We also don't want that phrase in there without any further elaboration to chill people from thinking that they can use the funds at religious institutions, which they certainly can and have a constitutional right to do. So there's these competing interests of the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause. And we think the types of things that the ACLU is talking about, if they're talking about, can this money be used to train a kid in seminary? No, it clearly cannot be under the New Hampshire Constitution and under other Supreme Court precedents like Locke v. Davy and Carson, maybe that carve that out. But there are other areas where it gets closer to the line, and there will have to be judgment calls made based on this case-by-case analysis of whether this is a free exercise issue or an establishment issue. And that line's not always necessarily going to be super bright, which is one of the reasons why we didn't think a sort of one-size-fits-all approach made sense for these rules. But the Constitution, the constitutional requirements of both the federal Constitution and the New Hampshire Constitution are part of these rules automatically because everyone has to comply with the Constitution all the time. Both. So,
and in addition, there are ongoing current cases.
It's yes, moving yes.
to the U.S. Supreme Court that right. are addressing this exact issue.
And so we made that point too. So one of the case that the ACLU primarily relied on in their concern was Carson, which I think was a misguided use of Carson. And I made that point the department made that point in the letter that we sent to Jokar that you have, our February 15th letter. Carson wasn't really addressing the question of religious instruction. So I don't know why they included that in their case, but to the extent they're relying on Carson, that case is currently under review. So it didn't make sense to memorialize something in our rules when the precedent is still emerging. But we were clear with them. We understand, based on existing Supreme Court precedents, that religious instruction is not a proper use of the funds. And the commissioner also believes that the EFA program as enacted by the legislature doesn't lean into permitting religious instruction. So there's a list of things that are allowed, and that's just not on there. And so where some members of the Jokar committee were concerned, and OLS staff and NHSAA and ACLU, was that there's a broad catch-all provision in the law that says in any other expenses approved by the scholarship organization. But, you know, we made the point in our letter that when there's a statutory list like that, and I know that Rich Salas talked about this before with me in other contexts, when there's a statutory list and there's a catch-all at the end, that catch-all has to be read as being things like the other things in the list. And since religious instruction isn't one of those types of items, we didn't think we needed to clarify. And we thought by including a prohibition on a certain activity, we might imply by not prohibiting other things that are clearly not allowed, that by implication, maybe those things were allowed. So like maybe we say religious instruction is not allowed. You can't use this, you know, funding to go to seminary. But what about flight school? So like, we don't think flight school is covered by this, but if we're saying specifically you can't do for this, then everyone's going to say, well, there's no can't do for this one. So that was another reason why we wanted to. And ultimately, Jokar did opt to approve the committee.
And you don't have to write in an exclusion for something that's constitutionally prohibited anyway.
Right. One would imagine, right?
Yes.
No, exactly. So I think there's no point in writing the rule because it's doubly not allowed. It's not allowed in the that's list right. of things that are in the rule already. And it's not allowed constitutionally, so why write
right.
it in?
Right, exactly. We thought it would be redundant for that reason, absolutely.
All right, any other questions? All right. Okay. So you want to do this first?
Yeah, so why don't we do that? If you guys will vote on the conditional approval request, then I'll go. And Jokar's staff told me they anticipate maybe 10 or 15 minute turnaround for when I do that. So I could go send the email, come back, and then we could do the other two, or we could do the, we could go to the remote rule at that time.
Yeah. That's great.
Okay.
Ready for a motion?
Yeah, ready.
I move that the State Board of Education approve the conditional approval response for ED 800 regarding the Education Freedom Accounts Program.
Second. Second by Ryan. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Yeah, that's four. Chairman of Saints, as always. So that's good.
Okay.
All right. So let's do, you can go ahead and go.
Yep.
There's nothing for you to explain on the other rule, right?
No, nothing's changed. Yeah, on that one, nothing's changed.
Okay, so let's just go ahead and do that. Right, so that's the this school year in distance education. And so this is our adoption. So this will be official after we adopt it. All right.
I move that the State Board of Education adopt 306.18 and EOD 306.22 regarding school year and distance education.
Second. Second from Ryan. All in favor?
Aye.
Yeah, great. So that is done. Case was from that.
Commissioner?
Yeah.
I had a question. We were all talking about it. On these accounts, on the Freedom account, I'm assuming that when they issue the check to a parent, do they do cards?
I got an answer.
You did.
But you probably have an answer too, so you do have an answer.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, so we don't issue any checks. There's no cash that's ever available. Right. We fund a digital wallet for the parent that can be spent at the approved providers, right? So they can't use it someplace that would be inappropriate.
Right. So and it works kind of like PayPal. Right?
Yeah.
You just digitally, you transfer the money to the approved provider.
I thought I read it in there, but I went back and looked and I didn't see it.
So this would hopefully, the way this works, it's supposed to prevent type of misuse that might crop up if you had, you know, a check or something else. So you can't, you can't go spend this, you know, at KFC. So that should keep it.
So Commissioner, will there be some type of like marketplace that they go to shop and use this digital wallet?
So there is a marketplace. Okay. So the scholarship organization is contracted with a company called Class Wallet.
Mm-hmm.
And Class Wallet has all of the approved vendors in their system. You know, so first the vendor has to apply to the SO, the scholarship organization, and get approved, and then they go into the marketplace. And so then they're able to access those funds that way.
And 30 days or before the 30 days is up. And they have a 30 days, they had like 30
days to
do it.
That's how long they have to approve it. Yeah, I mean, many of them are being turned around more quickly than that. But that's kind of like an outer limit. We didn't want them to be delaying that. So, and in the first year of the program, obviously, there's a number of vendors that had to get qualified in the first go around. And so that's happening rapidly as we speak. So,
very cool.
We should probably have spending data. I would think in another month or two, we'll get a first look at where the funds are going. Like, so now we know who, like the children that are enrolled in it. We have some basic information about that. But then soon we should start to get, be able to get a visibility into, okay, so where are they spending these funds?
Right.
And what are they spending them on?
Good.
And that's all, not, identifiable information. So, right. So we will see.
You won't see any identify. Yeah, we wouldn't have any.
Yeah, but there's no right. So you can't. So somebody couldn't do a right to know request or anything and find out what kids are in the program, what family is using it, like all that stuff.
That's all.
Be interesting though to track. Be interesting to track what they're spending it on.
Yeah, so we can track that. Yeah. We just can't tell. We can't link those items to individual students in a disclosed way.
Regionally, what's people are electing to take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would be interesting.
Yeah, it would be interesting. Like, right on the coast, on the east, on the Pacific coast, here's what they're doing, you know, whatever.
That's great. I'd be interested to see a breakdown of where the students come from, too.
So we have done some analysis. We have three categories. I didn't bring that information down with me.
No, I didn't expect it. I was just thinking.
I mean, I have it by town. I know every single town.
Yeah.
I can provide that information out to you.
Yeah, that would be just interesting at this point. I know we're still in the middle of the year.
What are the three categories, Commissioner?
Well, so we look at students who are trying to think what they were, but basically there are some students who are using EFAs that have never been in a public school. Actually, there's four categories then. There are some students who have been in a public school, but they weren't in a public school. They were in a public school before the pandemic. Then we have students who were in a public school, and when in 2020, they basically converted to an EFA. And, or, you know, because that was their last time in public school. And then we have students who are kind of new uptake, which is kids who were in public school in that, you know, took it up in 2021.
That's all that analysis.
Yeah. Well,
that's analysis.
It wouldn't shock me if a lot of people from Nashville started taking part of it. Because, I mean,
so I had it by town. Mm-hmm.
Nashville was some of the longest in-person school kind of lockdowns. We saw the longest amount of remote learning. So it wouldn't shock me if there's a lot of families that's taking advantage of the EFA programs there.
Do you do by age, too? We have information by grade in terms of it as well. Hi, Sally. Yes.
Hi. I was wondering if you could give me like some, or give the board, how many states or districts, or I guess states in the country are utilizing the educational
savings accounts.
So there's a lot of different choice programs. So I'm not sure I'm qualified to tell you exactly how many choice programs. I do know that I'm going to guess. I think there are 27 states that have some type of a choice program. There are 35 states in total that have various legislative actions going on presently that would implement something mm-hmm. at this point in time.
I think it's only 5 states that have an
actual EFA,
an ESA program like we have. That's my recollection, is by 5 or 6 states. So there aren't that many that have the ESA.
So scholarships are much more prevalent.
Scholarships or traditional vouchers or various other things. But the ESAs are becoming a lot more popular. So we're starting to see some legislation. So I don't think, I think in the next few years, you're going to see a lot more.
I wonder if San Francisco is going to be adopting some kind of a program.
I got a medical savings account
and
an education savings account.
Did you get a response?
I haven't had a response yet, but I just want to confirm whether you voted on the district school.
We did.
Okay, so I'll send that approval.
Yeah. All right, so we're just waiting for Joe Carr to give us some response. Sorry. And Richard, if you need the bail, just let me know.
Thank you.
You're good. Yeah.
Not a term, but take a pause.
We could, but I don't mind hanging out and with the cameras on.
I did receive a confirmation that my email was received.
Okay. That's a start.
So you got a text message read, basically?
Yeah. It was definitely automated, but I do know from a conversation I had with them just a few minutes ago that a few minutes before the meeting started, that they anticipated a 10 to 15 minute turnaround.
Oh, okay. That'd be good.
Okay, we'll do an Olympic update, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
Another scandal in ice skating.
What's that?
Another ice skating scandal.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, they had another scandal, too.
It's so...
All of the medal winners in the girls figure skating, all of them were like sad and crushed and upset. Just it's a
drama. Didn't something really dramatic happen on the podium?
Yeah, there was a lot of drama. These kids are 14,
well, now
15,
they're going to take a look at the age group of figure
16,
skating,
I mean, and the pressure they're under is
17, incredible. 17. Yeah. Well, and there's a 16-year-old in it.
They have a cup and say, take this, and they just take it. Because how can they not take it?
Right. United States is still at 21. Germany's 22. Norway's 34.
Yeah, the only winter Olympic sport I really care about is biathlon.
Are you serious?
The coolest. The coolest sport in the world. It's the coolest sport in the world.
50-kilometer cross-country this weekend.
You know what,
Drew?
What about the Finnish guy who's... was so far ahead and he made the wrong turn.
Oh, I didn't see that.
The guy who was supposed to win everything.
Oh my God.
And he's done this before.
He's done a wrong turn before.
Yes.
Wow.
He needs a little GPS on his watch or something.
He was delayed because he had COVID. He got released to go and he never got to preview the course.
Oh wow.
So he went out on cold.
Wow.
That was in the biathlon race.
It was cross country. Yeah, it must have been. It was cross country skiing and
Gun. Yeah, they do
guns.
You know, they should do a bad one with archery too. That would be cool.
That would be cool. It would be more.
Biathlon is cross country.
Cross country and rifles.
Yeah, sharpshooting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they got to carry the gun on their back, right?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, you do a prone and you do a standing.
You do a prone and a standing, which I don't know how they do the standing. Because they do the prone first, and then at the end, when you're exhausted and you're
wobbling all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, that is the hardest.
You're saying you're lucky there's not more casualties on the course.
So Margaret, when she was doing sharpshooter in her training, did better standing up than she did on the ground.
Really?
Wow. That's
pretty good.
That's right.
Yeah.
She won her whole platoon.
Yeah.
And the guy in charge who
qualify for the Olympics, and anyone who can match mine, I'll get you a case of beer. And Margaret did.
Wow.
Or he said beat, and she matched him.
He's just an average girl. Yeah, right.
There's
just an average girl. Of course he's not average.
He's not an Olympic qualified guy. Right.
You know, but that's the way it works. Like, you don't discover your talent until you do the thing. She may have just a natural talent.
She does not have my eye to hand coordination.
When I was at college, I was a photographer, and we needed an extra photographer to shoot a basketball game, and we got one of my friends, and he was like, "Oh, I'll do it." And we just gave him the camera, and he came down and shot the game for us. Now, shooting sports is very, very hard because
they're moving
really fast, and you have to. And back then, we didn't use autofocus. So you had to hand focus these basketball players, running and jumping and scoring and all that stuff. And so in a typical roll of film with 35 millimeter film, the typical roll of film of 36 rolls, you might get, if you got six,
you were really
in focus. Yeah. No, seriously, like if you had 6 to 8 shots in focus, usable, really good, sharp pictures, that was a good roll of film. This guy never held a camera before. First roll of film, he had like 24 shots in focus.
They were all of the water cooler.
They were action shots. So we gave him a camera and said, you're a photographer. Sign him up. Yeah, so you just, you have a knack for it or you don't.
You know what was really good? We took, freestyle skiing, we took gold and a silver. And then bobsledding, we did really good. We took a gold and a silver.
And that's old people. Yeah. Bobsledders are old people.
Anytime I think of bobsledding, I think of the movie Cool Runnings.
Yeah.
I immediately hear Jamaica as a bobsled team in my head every time.
Yeah. See, the mixed group, the mixed group, that man and woman, their combined age was 74.
What?
Freestyle skiing.
Yeah.
That is really good. You ought to watch that. Have you seen that?
Crazy.
Oh, yeah.
But the question is, how would you get into bobsledding or skeleting or?
It turns out I have an answer to this. So my younger brother and I, for a very long time, have thought it would be awesome to try out for the two-man bobsled. So we did a bunch of research in this, and it turns out that there's a facility in Utah that you can sign up and go and take classes and give it a shot and do some training, and then you can try out. So I'm just waiting for him to retire from the Marines, and then we'll go give it a shot.
Oh, that's great.
Definitely do that.
Hey, we'll come out and see you.
The 2026 Olympics. Can't right. wait.
I'm on my Peloton right now.
I'm going to be your coach.
I'll take it. Okay. I'll take it.
I know. And you look at the downhill skier, Michaela. I mean, she missed all her trials, I guess, right? Most of them. Wasn't able to finish.
Yeah, she had a psychiatrist with her.
Oh.
I'm sorry. She needed
one.
My brother-in-law was a World Cup aerialist, and he broke his femur, and then the next year and a half came back and became, this World Cup champ. And the politics of the Olympic Committee is so amazing. He did not make the Olympics, but he went through everything, all the competitions, and that is a really frightening sport. I don't know if you've watched it, but it's crazy.
Well, all of them, all the people who are in the Olympics, no matter what, they all have sports psychologists. They have to.
I'd highly recommend it. Anyways, but it was really hard to watch. You have your hands covered saying, okay, did he go up the jump and did he land?
Who was that child? He was either from Japan or China. He was doing the snowboarding. Yeah, and he went up 24 feet in the air, but he probably weighed a whole lot.
Yes.
They were amazing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, New Hampshire is the only state that has, right? We were the only state with a high school ski jump team.
Because of that new jump they put up.
Refurbished. So, yeah. So what was it? That, I just saw a story.
Well, Dartmouth has a jumping team.
We haven't had one for a while, but Dartmouth, yeah. And we're talking about high school.
High school?
Yeah.
That has a college too. Jumping
team. Yeah, Goshen, I think.
Is it Goshen? I think you so. Had a school, ski jump a couple years ago, they refurbished.
Yeah, Berlin, New Hampshire.
Yeah. Is that in Berlin?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
well, I think we should have a board meeting at that school, but
yeah.
As a requirement. Each one of us has to jump.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, as a part of leadership in New Hampshire, we had to climb this two times high telephone pole, and you jump off, and it's like this ropes course. And I was in with now Chief Aldenberg in Manchester PD, and we're roughly like the same height, size, and we kind of looked at each other, and when you belay, you have people that are Frank's size who are kind of anchoring you to the ground. And I looked at my class members, and I was like, listen, I'm down to try this, but when I jumped off that thing, they had legitimately three people and Chief Aldenberg all got off the ground like probably an inch. It was like, oh, but I did, so I'm about that, as long as people can actually catch me on the bottom.
Down.
Wasn't it fun?
Oh, it was amazing. I wouldn't do it again. But, I mean, I was kind of challenged because I wasn't going to. And then Chief Aldenberg was like, if you do it, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. So I did. I succumbed to the peer pressure. And honestly, I'm happy I did.
Yeah.
Wouldn't do it again, though.
That's great.
So it was Hanover that just won the state ski jumping championship. And the coolest part about it is, since we're the only state in the nation that does high school ski jumping,
you win high school,
you're the national champs.
Yeah.
No, there you go.
Yeah.
There's nobody else.
I can't even skate, so.
Yeah, they used to have one in Vermont. They used to have one in Vermont.
That is a no for me.
Vermont,
they
don't have one.
I didn't know we're the only state in the country.
National liability on it, though.
Yeah.
Says here, the estimated cost for the Olympics is $3.9 billion for China.
West High School has a JROTC marksmanship team, and they're going to the Nationals.
Oh, I saw that, yes.
West High School Manchester is sending their marksmanship class to the National, like they qualified for the Nationals. So
my friend who lives in Madbury has two children,
yeah.
And they both do slope style skiing.
Yeah.
Jumping, like this, they go up jumps.
Freestyle skiing.
Oh, yeah.
The freestyle. And
the daughter came in eighth, and so missed getting on the Olympic team by something.
Oh,
and the son came in fifth.
Wow.
He missed it by one spot.
Wow.
And they're from they're from Madbury, New Hampshire.
That's not what I'm hearing.
Right. So this is back.
No response yet, but I did think that before you adopt the final adoption, there were three typos that we didn't do, so I wanted to walk you through those. I thought we might as well use this time to do that. That way we won't have to do it when it comes through. It just occurred to me that might make sense. So let me see. So we want to do it at the one. Well, actually, I won't use page numbers. I will use
3C.
We're on
800 rules.
Yeah, 3C. Page numbers would be better if you have those.
Are you guys looking at the amended conditional approval response or the adopted rule?
Adopted
rule. Okay.
We can go to the other one.
So I've got the one in front of me, adopted rule annotated.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So let's go with that. So page 9, it is ed 803.01. Subsection I, and the change there is the last clause of that section says, and other educational expenses approved by the scholarship organization pursuant to 194 F2. it now is going to say, and for appeals of denials of other educational expenses requested pursuant to RSA 194F2. So there's that change, which is, again, these are, and none of these are substantive, but I just want them on the record that you had them in front of you.
Yeah.
The next one is at the bottom of page 10, 803.03B, and that new language is, it had read, local education agencies where private elementary schools and secondary schools are located shall ensure. The new language says LEAs in districts where private elementary schools and secondary schools are also located shall ensure. And then it continues on the same. So that's the second one. And I think there's only one other. 804, on page 11, 804.01D1. It now says, the language now reads, at the expense of the parent or guardian, and then after the comma, and such expense shall be a qualifying EFA expense. And just confirm that that's the final one. And that appears to be it. So those are the changes that weren't in your packet.
Going back to page 9.
Yep.
And sharing with us again, the change to I, following RSA 194-F:2.
Sure, so that's E-0301I. I'm just buzzed in my pocket. I see I have an email here. It's a letter from Jokar, so I'll have to look at that. Hopefully that's what we're waiting for. Let me get back to I here. So the way it now reads is, the scholarship organization's director shall appoint members to the Parent and Education Service Provider Advisory Commission pursuant to RSA 194F5, and which shall be responsible for appeals of education service provider denials and for appeals of denials of other educational expenses requested pursuant to RSA 194F220.
Thank you.
Or 20, rather. Yep, so that's it. So let me see what I have here from committee. The Grand Legislative Committee on Administrative Rules has reviewed the final proposal on the above-cited rule at its meeting on February 18, 2022. Committee voted to approve the proposal. You may proceed to adopt the rules and the proposal and file them with the Office of Legislative Services. So we are all clear to approve, and now we have just walked through the few minor editorial changes that were in, that weren't in your packet, so you're ready to adopt.
Okay.
I move that the State Board of Education adopt ED 800 regarding the Education Freedom Accounts Program.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. All right. Terrific. Thanks, Chris, for all your work.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. A lot smoother when Amanda does it. She knows how it works. And I should put in a plug for Amanda. She did a very nice job kind of lining everything up for me, so it was idiot-proof, which it needed to be. So, thank you.
All right. Well, thanks to Amanda, as always. I know she's going to be back with us weeks, month, in a while.
So. Anyway, I think it's unclear.
Yeah, so hopefully back soon. Yep. All right. So with that, I think we're good, right?
Please give her our best.
Mm-hmm. I will if I speak here.
Adjourn. Adjourn. Yep.
I'd like to make the motion to adjourn.
All righty. So get set.
I get Johnny on the
motion. Ryan second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. We're gone. Thanks, everybody.
Bye, Sally.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Camera's off, man. Huh?